It's the True Faith Newcastle United podcast. Newcastle were beaten 4-3 by newly crowned champions Manchester City at St James's Park, and it was quite the game. And to talk through that game and much more, you've got Charlotte Robson, Mark Corby, Norman Riley, and myself, Alex Hurst. Charlotte, kick off with you. That was fun, wasn't it?
Yes, so fun. I said on my show before kickoff that I was really anxious because Leicester was so good. It was like a consistently good performance throughout pretty much the entire game, which we weren't expecting. And typically in this Newcastle United, we see reasonably good pockets of games, if not the whole game. So like, you know, we had a good 60 minutes, we had a good 40 minutes, whatever. Followed by a really terrible performance, like players all over the pitch, you know, which is correct, but in not knowing where they're supposed to be, no cohesion, total just confusion, really. And I was very anxious. Man City are obviously, not to sound too much like Steve Bruce, an excellent side. They're top of the table. They have been crowned champions of the Premier League ahead of this game. So, yeah, I was nervous that we would totally capitulate, that after a good performance, we would be followed by not a good performance against a side that are clearly great. But it was crazy. It was fun. I mean, so there were, not to use the word again, but like pockets of like, ooh. But overall, against a team like that, I didn't expect us to play with such entertainment and an actual drive. And I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed watching last night. And that is an unusual thing to say this season about Steve Bruce's Newcastle United.
Yeah, very unusual. And to be positive for a second, I feel maybe the first time in Bruce's tenure that each time I watch the team play, ignoring the Arsenal game, the team are getting better. Now, that could just be the low expectations, even though we are supposed to have unrealistic high expectations. But also, I feel there is something in that. I feel Joe Willock is, you know, every game he plays, the team seems to get better around him. You know, Miguel Almirón had one of his best games in that position last night. So there was a lot of positives. We still lost the game, and I'm frustrated that we lost it. I thought it was a game we should have at least drawn and won. And, you know, for me, it was a real positive that at 2-1 down, I think everyone feared the worst. Yes, we went one up. Xavi hits the crossbar. Then we'll go 2-1 down. Very unlucky first goal. Very unlucky first goal to concede. It's weird when you watch teams like Man City play, the commentators are almost like unwilling to suggest that anything wasn't planned. So even that shot was going wide and would not have gone into the net without that massive deflection. The commentators were very reticent to be like, that was lucky. They just won't say it for teams like Man City. But we'll go 2-1 down, and I feel maybe that's the most positive part of the night. You know, there are still aspects of Newcastle's performance that aren't brilliant, but like you say, Charlotte, the fact that I think the entirety of the fan base almost has come out of a defeat to any side, but particularly a top side, and could be fairly enthused about what we saw, suggests the level of performance and how far the team has come since the difficult days of, what, January, February and March this year. Not April, of course, because best manager in the league for April, Steve Bruce. Norman, you've talked about taking one game at a time. How did you see the game last night?
Brilliant game. The fact that I didn't have any expectations going into it was a big help. I never expected we'd win, but at the same time, I wasn't fearful of a defeat because it's Man City at home. The away record's incredible. They've just won the league. Unlike Charlotte, I didn't have any nerves whatsoever. And I think that helped. I was totally relaxed watching it. And the performance itself, I think even if it had gone disastrously wrong, I don't think I would have been too upset because I never expected anything, as I say it. And to see what we did was a real, real pleasant surprise, at least for the first 70 minutes. I mean, we have to be realistic. The last 20 minutes were so dull. They were so dull. I mean, Man City just passed it and passed it and passed it. There was one spell where they had, I think, 3.5 minutes of the ball constantly uninterrupted, and we couldn't get anywhere near them. And you saw at the end, Joe Willock virtually collapsed. I think he maybe lost the use of one of his lungs at the end of the game. I can't verify that, obviously. But I think performance-wise, the way that we played on the counter-attack was absolutely superb. That pace, and Guardiola referenced the pace. It was phenomenal. ASM, you've mentioned Almiron, you know, ASM, Willock, they were brilliant. And obviously, you add Callum Wilson to that. And that's, we've been saying this all along, right? That's the bones of a very, very good side. And as a one-off entity last night, Nate was great. I think one of the issues it did raise actually was the fact that what we really need to do in pre-season, and I'm getting ahead of myself here, is we need an understudy for Wilson so bad. That's not me criticising Joe Linton's performance last night. You know, there were elements of Joe Linton's game that were relatively hapless last night as a standard, but ultimately he scored a fantastic penalty. He won the penalty. I can't criticise his performance at all, but it was a performance, along with the Leicester game, along with a few of the performances recently, that made me think, actually, a couple of really important signings, and ultimately, regardless of Bruce, will have a competitive side just because of the talent on the pitch. And that point you make on Willock is superb. Like, he's almost becoming the player that Bruce referenced, in that he's the kind of player you want to build a side around. I could see that. I can absolutely see that. So I'm feeling positive, but I'm feeling positive in the light of this one particular game added to a couple of recent performances. Long term, if I want to talk long term, I would still look at the league table. I would still look at the fact that, you know, Brighton win today, we're going to be fourth bottom. I can't celebrate that. That's celebrating mediocrity, right? That's getting to Sunderland levels when they were surviving in the Premier League by the skin of their teeth every year, having a brilliant run at the end of the season and everything's all right. Oh, look at this, everything's all right because we've had 8 or 9 matches at the end of the season where we've picked up X amount of points to survive. I won't celebrate that, but I will enjoy these performances. While Steve Bruce is manager, I'll enjoy performances like last night. We lost, but my word, wasn't it nice to be competitive against a really good team?
I totally agree with you. And just to like sort of touch on that future thing, and also Willock being knackered by the end because he seemed to be playing in a much more sort of forward role by the end, running around. That's something that I really hope that if we get him on an extended loan, or if we buy him, I'm saying the former because I can't see Newcastle United shelling out any cash, but if we get him, say, or a player of his ilk who's young, who is really athletic, I really, really hope that the pre-season and the training goes into so much more fitness and conditioning because our players are so good and have that pace. But like Norman said, by minute 70, 75, it's really hard to keep it up. And it's hard for any team to keep up running around like that. It is. But it's something that they really need to focus on if we're gonna be dangerous on the counter like we were last night, or dangerous with pace. We have to make sure that our players can keep that up and not have collapsed lungs at the end of the game.
Mark, I'll bring you in, mate. You said off air you had some stats that you thought would be good to contextualise what had gone on. Do you want to talk about that for us?
It's just more so the fact that what I found last night before the game, and straight away after the game, I think people aren't looking at the bigger picture. And as Norman rightly says, sometimes you sort of narrow it down to the game you've just watched. You want to analyse that. We're all on a, you know, the team does look a lot better over the last couple of weeks, couple of months, shall we say. But when people are making up stats to sort of praise a manager who, let's be honest, over the 2 years hasn't taken us any further forward, you're always going to automatically come back with the right stats, you know. The one in question, I think Mr. Edwards tweeted, we've scored 15 goals in 5 games. It's nowhere near that. It's something like 14-7. Now, that sounds arsey on my point, but if you're going to put it out there in the public domain, you've got to get your stats right, yeah? But, you know, yes, we can't. I mean, I'm sure we'll go on to the bigger picture as the podcast progresses, but it's still 1 win in 4 games. That's my view on this. I was positive about the performance because we didn't get battered. But what we've got to be careful of, in my opinion, if we just accept that we will lose tight games to teams like Manchester City, we will go down to the levels, like Norman said, like Sunderland. A couple of seasons ago, or 5, 6, 7 years ago, if you remember rightly, they used to beat Man City at home every season, but they were always in a relegation battle. But that was enough for them. Now, for me, if we go down that level where we're putting in the odd decent performance against a top team, you know, but forgetting the teams around us, I think that's quite worrying, because if you think about our performance against the teams you know, below us, who are left below us, should I say, we've took 2 points from 18, and the last two games are against teams below us. So let's review it when the season's ended. For me, I know it's a big contrast for me, because last week we were all absolutely buzzing with that unexpected performance at Leicester. But last night, as good as it was, and as Charlotte rightly says it in parts, it was a free hit for us. I thought Bruce probably just set them, just go out there and give it a go, as he says, you know. And we did. But on the negative side of that, I thought we were very, very sloppy defensively. And I think I share your view, Alex, that overall I'm slightly disappointed that we didn't get a point from that.
Some great points you've raised there. First of all, there was another team last summer that used to be regularly in those glory days from the bottom of the Premier League, but we'll not talk about them. Well, anyone know how they're getting on these days, by the way? Someone write in. Where are Sunderland now? What my favourite point you've said there, Mark, is that the season isn't over. And I found this last season, actually, and I said it on the podcast a few times, that ultimately, once we'd reached safety last season, with, I think, was it Bournemouth who beat, possibly? Was that the game where we're mathematically safe? And there were 6 Premier League games to go. And, you know, Charlotte brought it up on the pre-match Charlotte show last night. Isaac Hayden, Sean Longstaff have both said about last season that there was very much an on the beach feeling. And it, in the media as well, it was like everyone said Steve Bruce would take Newcastle down, he's kept them up. And it's like, yeah, but there's 6 games left of the season. And I felt that a little bit this week as well, where I'm impressed by last night, and I probably disagree with you slightly, Mark, which I'll come back to. But the season can still be shaped. Last night, in context of the West Ham performance, the end of the Liverpool game, the performance against Leicester City, now including last night, suggests some sort of upward trajectory. Certainly from where we were back in the dark days of January, February and March, where we couldn't win a game. Weren't even in games. So if we can take this on to Wednesday, big game Wednesday, fans in the ground, and then take it on to Fulham, if Newcastle can, unlike last season where we went into the end of the season with, you know, only 4 wins past January, I think, until the end of the season, and no wins in the last 6, we kind of took that into this season. Although this season started okay points-wise, the performances were very much the same and unsustainable, as we all said, and were proved right by. I thought last night was really important, because I have sat on this podcast too many times, and I'm sure people watching and listening have said to themselves or their friends too many times, when we've played these teams, we haven't even been in a game. When we went to Man City back end of last season, earlier this season, well, it wasn't a contest. The game was over before it began. The manager was stood there at full time, grinning with a 2-goal deficit defeat. The same at Old Trafford, the same at Chelsea. What you saw last night is, and Norman, you're correct about the last 70 minutes, and I think there's a lot left to be desired in terms of the way that we managed the game and the substitutions, but we might talk about that later. What last night was a really good game, and we were part of that game. And yes, Man City were probably missing 7 guaranteed first-team starters, but their replacements all cost £40 million as a minimum. You know, we were missing Callum Wilson, who, you know, possibly hyperbolic from me, but I'm going to be positive. Callum Wilson plays last night. I possibly think we'll win the game because he's that good, because he makes that much of a difference, because Man City clearly struggled against powerful running at them in the, you know, throughout the game. You know, so I'm really pleased last night. Me and Charlotte and talked about on the show. We did patron shows through the week, myself and Norman. We did the State of Play podcast. Charlotte, you did the match preview. We all wanted to see something more than what we had seen previously. And the fact that we got that, for me, is a positive. And everyone who's listening to this, if you watch the game, this wasn't Newcastle United under Keegan. It was Newcastle with 20% possession, low block, whatever you want to call it, 5 at the back. It was all of those things. And this, to finish off my point now, because no one wants to come in, like I'll keep saying, I'm going to give credit where it's due. Credit where it's due to Steve Bruce, coach and staff, the players for last night. But where has this been? Do you know what I mean? We were told in previous fixtures against these teams, there was no other way to play. You know, we played Manchester United at home with St. Maximin and Wilson fit. We put in a pitiful performance, an embarrassing performance against a team that had just been beaten 6-1 the previous week. And Man United are a good team and all of that. But, you know, it's brilliant to see us moving forward. It's brilliant to see the side progressing. It looks like, you know, for the first time under Steve Bruce, possibly, it looks like you can see things that are being worked on in training. It's no coincidence that all of a sudden we're a danger from set pieces. That's fantastic. That's what we want to see. But as positive as it is, and as, you know, as noble as Steve Bruce thinks he is by kind of standing there saying, well, you know, I've got my best players back. It's like, no. This raises as many questions as answers. But let's go win the next two games. The season is still alive. Let's go and beat last season's points total. Not that I give a fuck about that personally, but Steve Bruce seems to. Dave Jones of Sky Sports seems to. The season isn't over, and we'll put ourselves in a great position to have a fantastic end of the season, Norman.
Couple of points. What you said there about where's that performance been? I think in context, and Mark alluded to this, you have to look at the fact that we had nothing to play for, nor did Man City. So it was a case of just going out and play it. And that's what happened. I think if you put that game, you know, let's say this October, the upcoming season, right? We play Man City home in October and we're ensconced in the bottom five or six, which is the pattern, right? That's the reality. Is that kind of free-flowing performance of, look, lads, just defend and then hit them on the break. Doesn't matter. We've got all the points on the board. Everything's fine. We've survived. The remit's been hit. Do the players get that kind of that level of freedom if we're at a stage of the season where the game has a bit more significance? And that's, I suppose, that'll be the test, right? That'll be the test of what trajectory we are on. If we see Newcastle United in October, November next year, putting in these kind of fearless performances against teams like Man City, then you could argue that actually, all right, then something's been learned and we are moving forward. So I guess it's a case of wait and see. But clearly, if we continue playing like we did last night, like we did against West Ham, and I'm not saying these were perfect performances, but, you know, when is a performance ever perfect? But what we saw was entertainment, desire and fearlessness. And that's what I really want to see. And moving on to how the team set up, look, we know that ultimately a lot of those performances are down to the players' abilities as players, as opposed to any really sort of forensic tactical input, right? You know, we've worked on set pieces clearly, but, you know, you think back to when Bruce first took over, most of our goals were scored from set pieces. This is something that was already in the locker. It's just something that's kind of being brought to the fore again, right? It's, for me, it's the importance this summer of bringing in two or three players that can slot into the team when those big players are out of action, because this is what happens when football players get injured. And it's Callum Wilson, mate, you mentioned. We haven't won a single game without Callum Wilson. Every game Wilson's missed, we haven't won. He's missed 9 games. We haven't won one game without him in the side of those 9 games. This kid is vitally important. And you're right, I think last night it was a different game against Man City if he plays. As mad as that sounds, I think we would have had a better chance of winning. So it is, whilst Bruce is in charge, whilst we know he's not the kind of cerebral tactical manager, we need the players there to step in when those really important players aren't available. So somebody who can come in for Wilson, vital. Somebody who can come in for Maximin, vital. And I don't think it's, you know, beyond the realms of fantasy to spend the, what, 30, 40 million that would require. It's recruitment. Recruitment is massively important this summer to keep us on this so-called upward trajectory.
Just to back you up there, Norman, you know, I'm not all doom and gloom. I think if we go back to, I don't want to lead this down to a bash Steve Bruce, because I think I've been very fair about Steve Bruce over the course of the season. I really do. But if you look back at what you're saying, you know, since Jones has come in, we've won 5 and drew 5 of 16. That's a huge improvement from winning 5 and drawing 4 of the 20 before he arrived. You know, we're scoring more goals. You know, it was 19 and 20 before Jones arrived. It's 24 and 16 since he's arrived. He's had an impact. Whether people want to accept that or not, it's a fact. We can't argue with that. So, yes, I agree we are ending the season more positively in the way we're playing, the way we're lining up. Definitely giving teams like Man City a better game, shall we say. I think probably the sort of optimism's a little bit bashed from me, because, you know, you've got to remember, it's 5 years today that we beat Spurs 5-1. You know, and the sort of atmosphere around the whole football club was totally different. But we still had hope. And I'm not referring to Craig Hope either. We had huge hope around the football club. And the future looked bright, you know, because we believed in one man. Now it's 2 years, obviously, since Benitez has gone. But in them 2 years, we haven't done anything that justifies going into next season at this point in day, that justifies having that belief that Bruce can really take us forward. And we want to believe that. We want to end the season well. But I just feel, you know, if we're going to really praise or allow the press and the media to brainwash us into believing that Steve Bruce is the right man to take us forward, then perhaps that our expectations have fell that low that that we just accept mediocrity, as Norman said.
Unmute myself. I don't think the majority of Newcastle United fans will accept what a lot of the press and the pundits say. I think you can see that. I know that social media is just this microcosm and it doesn't actually represent, I mean, there's what, tens and hundreds of thousands of fans. I've got like this lovely little Twitter bubble of about 1,000, you know? But having said that, if you take that as like an indication of what the fan base thinks of pundits and journalists saying that we need to accept X, Y, and Z, I don't think that we do or will. And to your point, Mark, about hope and like you can't sort of get excited about Steve Bruce next season and that you don't see anything hopeful. Well, I'm going to be like really glass half full and say maybe not our head coach, but something is changing, and I think the mindset within the players is better than it was. I mean, if you think about a couple of months ago, we were told he'd lost the dressing room. He's shoulder barging his own players, you know. And I was like, right, well, they're not going to be playing for him. They're not going to be playing for anyone. Like, what's the point? But I've been totally proved wrong. I think the players are really, not to sound cheesy, but like kind of inspiring. Like you see how much Matt Ritchie wants it. You see how much Joe Willock wants to impress. He wanted to be in the starting 11. He doesn't want to be an impact sub, and he got there. And I see so much hope in that. It might not be Steve Bruce is the one, but the, you know, there has to be some credit there that they have to not hate him so much that I mean, maybe I'm scraping the barrel, but they must, you know, like him enough to go out there and want to work well as a team, and I do think that they are, and I think that's a very hopeful thing going into next season. So I'm being very positive, but I do think that that's something to be a glimmer of excitement for next season.
I think you both make good points, but you both say things that I completely agree with. With the attitude that I've had, and I've repeated this, so I'm sorry for saying it again, like on another podcast, but I'm following the kind of well-worn football cliche of taking each game as it comes. As long as Steve Bruce is the manager at Newcastle, I think we are going to be beset with these inconsistencies, these up and down periods. So right at this precise moment in time, we're having what I would call a good period. Things are looking good. Like, you know, that's the reality. I'm not saying things are looking good, you know, into the future. Things aren't going to be good, like, you know, ad infinitum. We haven't turned the corner. I can't be convinced we've turned the corner until you actually think, well, yeah, well, we have turned the corner because this is a consistent pattern, right? But ultimately, right now, as a Newcastle fan, I'm enjoying certain aspects of watching that team. And what you've said there, Charlotte, about the players, I do love those players. I really do. There are some players in the team who I've really taken to heart, and there's a lot of players in there who are so likeable that I think it's probably one of the most likeable squads that I've witnessed as a Newcastle fan. And there's like a kind of youthful enthusiasm as well. And I genuinely think Joe Willock has brought a lot of that, right? And I think, again, this underlines the importance of trying to get him in or someone of his ilk next season, because that exuberance that he brings along with his outrageous footballing talent, right, which he is, he's a really good footballer, I think it's lifted everyone massively. The kid's got 5 goals in 5 consecutive games. I think it's like a record for someone of that age in the Premier League, right? Something along those lines. So at this moment in time, really enjoying it, and I'm going to approach the Sheffield United game looking forward to watching it, because I think it's a game that we can win, and I think the way we've been playing lately suggests there's a confidence there. But ultimately, I'm not you know, I'm not going to say that I'm feeling gigantically positive about next season, because the way things are, I can't even look that far ahead necessarily. It's like, right now is good. Let's see how the summer goes in terms of signings and see where we're at, you know?
I think it's a great point about the future, because it's just unique, isn't it, Newcastle United? You've got the club in two separate legal disputes with the league. You've got the PIF of Saudi Arabia, supposedly, if you believe what you read, still interested in buying the club. That's got to permeate through the whole club. That has got to have a massive... It has an effect on me as a fan, and I'm sure lots of people watching and listening. Imagine what it's like to work there, to be part of that, to be thinking about next season, and loath to do it, because I still think this season has been absolutely dreadful and below the required minimum standard that I'd expect from Newcastle United. But I do have some sympathy with Steve Bruce for that situation that he's in. Appreciate he's paid lots of money, and I appreciate he talks loads of shite. But he has to go to work knowing that if his boss is successful in his legal action, he'll be out of a job. You know, and it takes something to stick through that, and you know, and come through the tough times that he has had to deal with this season, you know, which I would argue of is ill making and most of the time. So that kind of triumph and adversity, and again, you know, I was going to put a tweet out last night just before we got that penalty, saying I feel quite low here, that I thought the first half last night went as well as it possibly could, and we were still going to go in behind. And that was kind of a positive and a negative, that it had gone well in terms of the performance, in terms of creating a couple of chances, posing a threat, all the things we haven't done against these sides for a long time. And not just against these sides, by the way. You know, Fulham at home, we didn't create a chance. West Brom at home, we hardly created a chance. All that kind of stuff. But ultimately, I thought that's what impressed me most about last night. It was kind of not the roll over and die. And I think you're right, Norman. I think Joe Willock is a massive part of that. I really do. I think that enthusiasm that he has, and that willingness to never stop running, and the willingness to, I mean, you know, he's one of those players. And Almiron's the same, but Almiron doesn't have the same quality in front of goal that Willock clearly has. You know, Joe Willock is always the first person joining the counter-attack and the first lad back. He's even back before John Joe Shelby, who hasn't moved. You know, he's just up and down, he's everywhere. And like you say, it does start to feel like they are building a team around him. There are a few lads last night who I also feel need to have a little bit of recognition. It was a great light night last night for the unpopular lads, for the uncool lads, the lads no one likes. So Emile Kraft, you know, he comes in against Leicester. Everyone's shocked. Everyone's disgusted. Two fantastic games for me. I said it last week in the podcast. Some people weren't happy. I think, you know, with the players that are available, obviously for me, my first choice back three probably at Newcastle is Lejeune, Lascelles and Fabian Scher when they're all here or fit, but they're not. None of them are available. So I think Kraft deserves his place. Fantastic header. Hilarious celebration. Hilarious. Embarrassed, almost. Embarrassed to score. You've got John Joe Shelby. Norman, I know you want to talk about him, so I'll bring you in a sec. John Joe Shelby, fantastic free kick. Deserved a goal. Would have been 2-0. Who knows what happens from there. Fantastic free kick and assist from a corner. And also Joe Linton we finally found something he's good at. Finally. We'll talk about Joe Linton first before doing my weekly Shelby report. I don't know who wants to come in on that, but the decision not to take the second penalty, can someone please analyse what is going through his head there?
Well, we don't need to, actually, Alex, because Steve, I don't know if you saw Steve Bruce's post-match comments, but... Pardon?
I avoid them.
Well, he literally came out, I had it on, he came out and they said, sort of, why did he not take, you know, the second one? And Steve Bruce said, that was Joe Linton's choice. It's a South American thing. They don't like to take two in a row, I'm told. That's kind of what he said. It was like, it's a South American thing. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm pretty sure Messi has taken more than one penalty in the same game. I'm pretty sure, you know, those players have. I still don't know what their thinking was, because just to track back to the penalty that Joe Linton scored, I couldn't believe it. Like, if you think about all the times Joe Linton's been in front of goal with just him and the goalkeeper, and he just dribbles the ball to the goalkeeper. There's no power, there's no force. And it's like, why are you number nine? I don't understand this. When he got in front of that ball for the penalty, there was so much power. It was so impressive. It was just, it was confident. And I was like, I don't know this player. This is amazing. And then to get given another penalty and for him to be like, no, not again. I don't know if maybe he was thinking, that was a fluke. I know it was a fluke. I'm never going to do that again. I want to go out on a high. Or it is this cultural thing that we're not aware of that Steve Bruce has come out and educated us on after. But yeah, a very strange decision. Obviously, I think the speed and the excitement of Willock kind of, because obviously he missed the second penalty, but got it on the rebound. And I think that's a testament to his sort of hunger and speed and just like aware click there, sorry, like total engagement with the game. But yeah, it was a very, very, very strange thing. But I think Norman has a theory, so let's see what he thinks.
First of all, I will say that having lived in South America on a couple of occasions at least and visited the continent on, you know, more occasions than I can remember, I've never heard that theory. And I've watched quite a bit of football over there. And also, to say it's a South American thing, I mean, that's essentializing one of the biggest continents in the world, right? There's quite a lot of countries in, a few different cultures. However, it's a brilliant theory, don't get me wrong. My theory on it is, in general, that Willock just wanted it. He wanted it and he said, I'm having it. It's as simple as that. And he's a strong personality. Joe Linton doesn't come across as being a strong personality. He actually comes across as being someone who's quite timid. That's probably linked into his self-confidence, right? After 2 years of basically taking batterings in the Premier League. But Willock has got a ton of confidence. He got fouled, right? He wanted that penalty. It's as simple as that. He wanted it and he said, I'm taking it and there's nothing else he can do. And I think I just posited before that he reminds me, in terms of his ability and what he brings to the game, it's Kieran Dyer, right? But his competitiveness reminds me of Craig Bellamy. And Bellamy wasn't afraid to just say, I want this, I'm doing this, and that's it. So that would be my theory. And also, I'd just like to quickly see you bringing Emile Kraft. You know, I like Kraft in the side, along with Richie. Because it looks like we've got like two sort of German tank commanders from the Second World War on the side. You can just both imagine them popping their heads out the side, out the top of a tank in the Libyan desert. You know what I mean? Not Nazis, just part of the German army. Wasn't their fault.
Oh, they didn't want to be there.
They didn't want to be there, but they're just following orders, right?
Yeah.
Somebody wrote, I think it might have been Taylor, but somebody wrote, Emile Kraft looks like Matt Rich has been put through a pasta machine. Just a little bit longer.
Just a quick one on that, you know, Steve Bruce's point. I mean, I'm not making him out to be. I accepted. I was quite, all right, if that's the case, because to be honest, my initial point was I thought Willock was unprofessional. I thought if he's took that from Joe Linton, having scored that penalty, my initial thought was, oh, you're out of order here. But if that is true, and Steve Bruce is saying that Joe Linton, you know, never takes a second penalty, South Americans don't. I mean, I can't recall any South Americans who took two penalties in one game for Newcastle. But I'll tell you what, I mean, Norman, you remember Mirandina. Alex has brought back some great memories of him in the chat. He's Mirandina. You would never have got the ball off him if I had two penalties in one game. I can't recall him scoring two in one game, but he certainly had a run of fixtures when we got relegated, Norman, where we won a lot of penalties, and he was always my first penalty taker, no matter what, no matter if it was a spawny penalty, he just scraped over, or, you know, but yeah, minus, if that is true, if there's any truth in that Joe Linton excuse, shall we say, then I'd rather accept that than being a little bit annoyed at Willock for wanting to take the penalty, and yes, we're quite fortunate we scored in the end. So that's just my view on it anyway.
I think for me, Norman, because this is you said, and I agree with you, I think Willock just grabs the ball when he goes down and he's like, it's mine. But it comes down to personalities and desire, because if Callum Wilson's on that pitch, do you think he's getting the pen? Because I don't. I think Callum Wilson's like, I understand Joe, give me the ball. You know, it reminded me of the Mitrovic, Matt Ritchie situation against Preston in the Cup back in 2016 now, which was like, at the time, you know, there was the great which side of the Mitrovic debate. You either thought he was not very good, couldn't be trusted, or you were wrong and you thought he was a good player. Three Premier League goals this season, by the way, for Mitrovic. That'll set some people off. But it was, you're right, it was a really unprofessional scene. I think Newcastle were winning like 4-0 at the time or 3-0, and Mitrovic, was absolutely furious that Matt Ritchie took the ball off him and said, no, I'm the penalty taker. It does, there's lots of reasons to criticise Joe Linton. We've finally seen, like you correctly say, Charlotte, something that he can do. We understand what the scouts were doing in Hoffenheim when they went over to watch him play and train. They just saw him taking pens and were like, wow, get this lad in the Premier League. I just think if you're Joe Linton, and okay, yes, we'll have to park Steve Bruce's cultural exchange programme on penalties, which he's invested in, clearly. But, if you're Joe Linton, take the second pen. Your Premier League goals to game ratio is a disgrace. It's a chance to improve that. You're on a hat-trick at home to the Premier League champions while winning 3-2. What a situation to put yourself in. And I think it speaks a lot to his lack of killer instinct in front of goal. Like, he isn't desperate to score like Callum Wilson is. He isn't he doesn't wake up in the morning thinking about scoring goals for Newcastle. I'm sure he wants the team to do well and wants to do well personally. And he's a nice bloke. I don't doubt any of that. But I think it did say a lot last night, because if Callum Wilson's on that pitch, he's taking both those pens, whether Joe Willock wants to or not.
No doubt. I think everyone makes decent points saying, it's all speculation, right? I think, Charlotte, you said that maybe he just didn't take it because obviously he scored a belting goal, and, the way that his confidence has been for such a long time in front of the goal, that it almost might play in his mind that he might miss it if he takes a second one. It's almost like, right, I've done something brilliant and I'm going to leave it at that. That could play in. But again, I think, we're probably analysing it too deeply. I think Joe Linton, he doesn't have the force of personality that Wilson has, right? But in any organisation, and I hate saying this, right, because it's kind of applying, people in organisations logic, but there is a hierarchy. There's a hierarchy, right? And there are people who make the decisions, and that's it. And you don't necessarily challenge them. And I think Willock is such a strong personality. Clearly, the impact he's had is huge, right? I mean, it's not an exaggeration to say he has literally transformed Newcastle United season, him being at the club. And I think that place in the hierarchy he has just completely overruled Joe Linton. It was like, I'm taking it. Bang, no argument. You're right. If Wilson had been on the pitch, Willock wouldn't even... I don't even think he would have tried. He would have just accepted it. But that hierarchy, right? Wilson's not there. Willock's higher up, and that's it. There's an academic study in this, There's an academic study in this, and I really want to do it.
Someone write to Steve Bruce. Get him cited. Norman, Matt Ritchie, you have been impressed, and you've talked about his influence on this side repeatedly in recent weeks. What did he make of him yesterday as well, mate?
Well, he was just, our resident tank commander. He was excellent again. Look, again, defensively, you're not going to get much defensively, right? But you're going to get that kind of long bursting desire to win. And okay, he wasn't directly involved in goals last night, but I just thought his distribution was fantastic. His ability to switch the play from one side, the pitch was there. One of the corners he put in last night was like begging for a touch. It was a beautiful corner. And again, you think if Wilson had been on the pitch, if that corner had gone in the box, that's probably a goal, right? And it's clear that the leadership, and again, we mentioned Willock as a strong personality whose exuberance has clearly rubbed off on other players. Richie's in that category. There's no two ways about it. He's been vital. Him and Dummett come back in the side has been transformational alongside Willock. And you think of Richie, right? Spurs at home, his ball to Longstaff, who squared at the Joe Linton to score. His cross at the box for Willock to score. West Ham at home, his corner for Joe Linton's goal. Leicester away, Richie's corner for Dummett's header. And it was his through ball for Wilson's goal. He's just been invaluable. And it's incredible because I genuinely thought, a few seasons ago, when I think Rafa basically tried to sell him, right? There was rumours of him going to Stoke City and it just didn't come off in the end. I thought he was finished then. He came back as a wing back. Bruce Bailey played him. They had a fallout. I thought he's finished. I thought a player with his lack of pace now in the Premier League, he's going to be a weak link, right? But the reality is, he has been like a complete renaissance man for me. And I think, look, is he the long-term future of the club? Of course he's not, because he's in his early 30s, right? And he plays on the flanks. It's unsustainable to be playing in that position when you're 34, right? I mean, unless you're someone like Azpilicueta, who's a naturally gifted player in that position. But I think he is really, on a personal level, he's completely proved me wrong. I thought Richie was finished as a player who could offer us something in the Premier League, and he's been fantastic, like really overjoyed. And also, I'm happy to say it because he's clearly somebody who deeply cares about, you know, what he does on the pitch. He's not the kind of player who, you know, puts his flip-flops on and gans the beach when the team survived.
Absolutely, Norman. And one thing I will say, we've touched on, you know, bringing in Willock and, you know, the return of Wilson, St. Maximin and things like that. We've got the reasons for the season turning around in the end. But let's be honest, that training ground spat could have saved the season. It could have saved Steve Bruce's job. It could have stopped us up, kept us up. He's captain material for me. If he's still here after the summer, we'll make him captain and we'll move forward, because for me, I've questioned Lascelles' captaincy for a long time. I don't think he's vocal enough. I don't think he's good enough. And Shelby's certainly not captain. But for me, yes, I think Norman's nailed it with Richie. He's a lovable player. He's very vocal. And it's funny because I remember years ago, Alex, when we did the True Faith quiz, and Matt Ritchie and Dummett was there, and I couldn't believe how little he was. You look at these players on the football pitch, and they look blokes, look proper men, you know what I mean? And I couldn't believe how little he was. He looked like a little boy who just won a day of training, you know, with the team. But hey, he's got a great heart, and I'll personally say that I think that spat saved the season, to be honest.
Or Mark, the reporting of it saved the season, even though Steve Bruce is not happy about it still. Norman, speaking of Steve Bruce and things he does and says, you know, he gave a much derided interview to TalkSport this week, and then he's obviously had a pre-match press conference where we touched it a lot last night on Charlotte's show, where he said he didn't know what he was saying because he doesn't have a vocabulary. What do you want to say about the things he said this week, mate?
I've got a couple of things to say, but just quickly on Matt Ritchie. I met him in Central Station after the 3-0 win against Cardiff, and he must have been getting the train back to Hampshire, and he was with Bobby Cordova-Reed, who was at Cardiff at the time, and he was really sound. Like, I mean, I must have been 9 pints deep at this point, so I was probably, my vocabulary might have been a little bit off at this particular moment. But I spoke to him and he was dead sound, and what I like about him is that he was shorter than me. Shorter than me, which is, for me, it always endears someone to me more when they're shorter than us. I really love that. I wish I lived in a world where everyone was shorter than us, really. However, I digress. Bruce's comments, you see, this is the thing, like every time a match finishes and something good's happened, I then listen to Steve Bruce's comments, I'll read them, and without fail, he always says something that makes you think, man, you're making it really difficult for me to want to give you any credit for this. You're making it really difficult for me to want to like him, but he keeps saying these things. And last night, post-match, let me see, I've got them here. This is bearing in mind the performance we put in, bearing in mind the comments, those incendiary comments, right, on Tuesday, which were ultimately an insult to the fan base, regardless of how you frame it, army vocabulary is bad. No, they were pointed and he knew what he was saying. It's as simple as that. If you're going to do the job in the Premier League, you come in for criticism. Sometimes it's unjust. I always said when we had our players at fit, we'd be all right. I'm a football manager and I've been doing it a long time, but I'm prepared to work away at it and grow an even thicker skin. Right. I'll say this, and I hate to talk about it because I feel like I'm being negative about something that was actually positive, which was last night, but I have to, because ultimately, you know, I can only assume that he's actively seeking out this criticism online or in the printed press, because there isn't anyone in the stadiums. Right? There's no one in the stadiums. So in order to receive or learn of criticism, you must seek it out, or somebody is telling you what's going on, right? And I just can't get my head around it. If he's actively seeking it out, the question has to be, why? Like, why is this being sought out? But then actually, the other theory is that, and I think we spoke about this on the State of Play, Alex, is that the media are framing the fans as being negative towards Steve Bruce, right? It's like this framing in the media, the fans are criticising, and then they're also telling them that he's doing a brilliant job. So we're telling him he's terrible, and the fans are saying he's doing a brilliant job, and this is the information he's getting. But actually, he's not getting any real information from the fans because there aren't any fans in the stadium. So this whole narrative, it's almost like it's fictitious. It feels fictitious, because I can't see how when there aren't fans in the stadium, when there have been fans in the stadium for over a year, he's receiving this criticism. So ultimately, I'm going to say it is literally something the media are making up, and he's taking it as verbatim.
Well, possibly, but he did say in one of his thingies, and I mentioned it last night actually, because I think it's just so harsh. He was like, he was talking about the social media blackout, and he was like, yeah, I'm not on social media, but I heard that they say some horrible things about one referee. And then his son was like, oh no, you should see what they say about you. And then showed him, Alex Bruce showed him some horrible stuff that was said about him, which just it makes me laugh so much because it's so horrible. Well, I would never show my dad like.
Yeah, Charlotte, I have an example of this where very few, sad, lonely people don't like me for whatever reason on social media, and I mute them. The mute button is wonderful. And Mickey from the True Faith podcast will screenshot me messages. of these horrible things people are saying. It's like, Mickey, why are you showing me this stuff? Like,
yeah. Don't see it.
Yeah, so you are spot on, Charlotte. It's just like, imagine, like, you know, Steve, if he's following coronavirus protocols, might not have seen Alex Bruce in a long time. Is it as if the first thing Alex Bruce wants to show his dad is like, look how horrible, John 8094673 is about you. It's not real life. It doesn't seem like a genuine thing that has happened, does it? But it must have, Mark.
My other gripe with what he said is that Norman just read out there is I'll grow an even thicker skin. In my opinion, Steve Bruce has no skin. So he it's beyond thin skin. It's just no skin. It's a really niche reference, but there's a thingy called Inside Out Boy from Nickelodeon from like the 90s. And that was a boy with no skin. And that's how I imagine Steve Bruce. Because by saying an even thicker skin, he's suggesting he has a thick skin now, which I've seen no evidence of at all. A manager with thick skin does not phone up TalkSport on Monday to after a big game where everybody in the fan base is feeling like positive about it all, and then go off on one about the fans and about how difficult it is and X, Y, and Z. That's not a manager with a thick skin. If it's his goal to eventually grow a thick skin, then I support that. But I totally reject the notion that he currently has one. But yeah, that's me.
I just the unjust point, it baffles me. Again, I'm throwing stats out there, but you can't argue with the stats. It's 14 wins in 56 games. You know, that's 1-4. That's relegation form. Doesn't matter how we've been doing over the last couple of months. We could still finish this season if we don't win another game and Fulham win all them. We would finish the season 3 points above relegation. That's going that far backwards that you can't celebrate that. And the Manager of the Month award, it's laughable. You know, look at it. I looked at it over the season. And, you know, you've also got to remember, if we don't beat Sheffield United, it's our worst points return at home in the Premier League. So how can these stats be unjust when they're staring the man in the face? And I think Norman made a point earlier in the chat. I believe this season's is it the worst, the biggest number of goals we've conceded at home, Norman, is that right?
It is. This is the most we've conceded at home in the Premier League. The thing is, I will caveat the statistics. I'll go against you slightly, Mark, and I understand what you're saying, but ultimately, a lot of teams' home records have been affected this season. It's been a very unique season in that sense, and I do think, as mad as it sounds, the lack of fans in the stadium you're putting two separate arguments together. There aren't any fans in the stadium. Teams have had really inconsistent home records, like a lot of teams. So maybe there's a connection there. I will say that. But ultimately, you are right. I mean, like, you know, if we're looking at the bigger picture, 14 wins in 50-odd games is shocking. But I'm not going to... Like, when the podcast ends, I just want people to know, if this is my final comment, I really enjoyed the game last night. It was an excellent performance. And there was lots to be happy about. So, yeah, I'm just going to head off now. That was great.
Well, I think we have finished the analysis of the game. You know, the only thing we haven't really touched on is the last 20 minutes was disappointing. The players were knackered. I thought, you know, substitution should have been made proactively rather than reactively. I thought keeping John Joe Shelvey on and a booking when we needed legs in midfield was just, I'd say, you know, insane, but it's, you know, to be expected. John Rashelby plays every minute of every game. We know that. That's the way it goes these days. It's not worth fighting it. You know, taking off Joe Linton but not bringing on a striker, then bringing on Dwight Gayle 5 minutes later. You know, don't really have the words when you're chasing the game, but you know, let's not go down that route. We played well. All I wanted to say in that game was just to give them a game. We gave them a game. We'll go to St. James's Park on Wednesday. Some of us are there. I'm really looking forward to it. You know, there's probably, you know, been this argument of how will Steve Bruce manage when fans are in ground. Well, he's going into this game in with the team comparatively in fine form. I don't think, you know, if Newcastle get beat 2-0 by a dreadful Sheffield United, Steve Bruce will feel the pressure. You know, that's normal. I don't think it's unique to Newcastle fans that if Newcastle play well and win 2-0, people will be pleased. You know, the game is almost bigger than football, you know, or the situation or Steve Bruce. From a personal perspective, you know, meeting my friends before the match for a drink, walking up to St. James Park. I'm gutted it's a 6 o'clock kickoff, to be honest with you. It's really frustrating that. And I can't get, like, I can't take the afternoon off work or anything, so I get like one or two pints booked. But it'll be great to be back in St. James Park watching Newcastle United play football. It's you know, we all cherish that and treasure that because it's why we're all here. It's why we're talking to each other, it's why everyone listening or watching is doing it. So that's really positive. One thing to comment on is that the club didn't, you know, did a ballot. There was no need for a ballot because they didn't get rid of all 10,000 tickets, which maybe a sign of the times a little bit, and maybe depending on what happens in the summer, takeover wise or transfer wise, you know, those 10,000 free season tickets might be called upon again next season, and maybe the number will increase, but time will tell. But certainly going back into the game on Wednesday, which I'm really looking forward to attending, we're in good form. We're playing well. Alisson Maximan should be fit. Joe Willock should be fit. So we should have a, you know, we should win that game. There are no excuses for not winning that game, particularly like one of you alluded to, the performances against Fulham, West Brom, Sheffield United this season have been below par on every single occasion. So that has to change on Wednesday. Norman, you've got another point to make.
Last night's game was really unique and for a couple of reasons. Not only was it like basically in part a testimonial for Scott Carson, which it was almost like basically Pep said, "Oh yeah, your career's over now, so I'm going to play you so you can say bye to everyone." It's like they were talking, like, the pundits were talking about Scott Carson as if he was like this 120-year-old man who'd just been brought out of retirement to play a game so everyone could say goodbye. But what also was funny is, like, in terms of Man City, the difference between Carson and Edison, like, literally Edison's one of the best goalies in the world and is pretty much an outfield player. And Carson was like glued to his line all game. But you know what was interesting yesterday was that Newcastle had three shots on target and we scored all three, right? Obviously, you know, two were penalties. Well, one was a pen, I guess. One was a tap, a rebound. And Carson didn't make a single save. And Man City, six shots on target, four goals. It was very unique, right? It was almost like an on-target 100% conversion rate. So I think that tells you about last night's game as well, right? It was a really unique game of football in many ways, in my opinion. Like, something I genuinely don't recall seeing a game like it.
You know what's interesting? You used to see a lot more old goalkeepers, I feel, in the Premier League. You used to see... You know, was it Mike Pollitt at Wigan was like 38th when he made his Premier League debut?
John Burge, 42?
You know, Neville Southall went on ages. David Seaman was getting on. You just don't really see them anymore. But just to give you some reference about Scott Carson's career, is he was in goal when Graham Souness' Newcastle beat Liverpool at St. James's Park back in 2004 or 5. So the kind of career he's had. I think that does it. Norman, take a step back for me, please. For the listeners, this is no good to you, but viewers can see Norman wearing their brand new True Faith from the Tyne t-shirt range. Get your t-shirts, £16, I think, plus postage and packaging. We've got a new fanzine on sale, of course. I'll hold that up for the camera so people can see it. We'd be delighted if you bought a £2.50 plus postage and packaging. And finally, we're on Patreon, of course. We do loads of extra podcasts. We'll have a full Sheffield United and Fulham preview this week as we head into the last week of what has been a largely dreadful season. But let's hope we can end it on a high. We've got loads for you coming this summer, as well as full European Championship communication. Next Friday as well, the Supporters Trust and the 1892 Pledge Scheme are hosting a live event. Friday night, 7 o'clock, Alan Shearer will join us. Charlotte is hosting it to talk about the season, talk about the 1892 Pledge Scheme and talk about Newcastle United in general. So please join us for that next Friday, 7 p.m. live on a range of YouTube channels, Facebook channels, on Twitter, on NUFC360's feed. So join us for that. I'll leave it there. Thanks, Charlotte, Mark and Norman. It's been a pleasure. We'll speak to you. I don't know if we'll do a show midweek after Sheffield United. We'll decide. We might ask a guest on. We'll see. I'll think about that today, get some heads together. And thanks for listening to the True Faith Podcast. We appreciate it. Speak to you all very soon. Bye-bye.